Chapter 65. Reply. Charles H. Clark to S. 50. Clemens. My dear friend, you are the only literary animal of your particular subspecies in existence, and you've no cause for humility in the fact. Yale has done herself at least as much credit as S.E. has done you, and don't you forget it. 100. H. C., with the exception of his brief return to the river in 1882, Mark Twain had been 27 years away from pilots and piloting. Nevertheless, he always kept a tender place in his heart for the old times and for old river comrades. Major Ack Downing had been a Mississippi pilot of early days, but had long since retired from the river to a comfortable life ashore in an Ohio town. Clemens had not heard from him for years, when a letter came which invited the following answer. To Major Ack Downing, in Middleport, Ohio. Elmira, N.Y. No month, 1888. Dear Major, and has it come to this, that the dead rise up and speak? For I supposed that you were dead, it has been so long since I heard your name. And how young you've grown! I was a mere boy when I knew you on the river, where you had been piloting for 35 years, and now you are only a year and a half older than I am. I mean to go to Hot Springs myself, and get 30 or 40 years knocked off my age. It's manifestly the place that Ponce de Leon was striking for, but the poor fellow lost the trail. Possibly I may see you, for I shall be in St. Louis a day or two in November. I propose to go down the river, and oath the changes once more, before I make the long crossing, and perhaps you can come there. Will you? I want to see all the boys that are left alive. And so Grant Marsh, too, is flourishing yet? A mighty good fellow, and smart too. When we were taking that wood flat down to the chambers, which was aground, I soon saw that I was a perfect lubber at piloting such a thing. I saw that I could never hit the chambers with it, so I resigned in Marsh's favor, and he accomplished the task to my admiration. We should all have gone to the mischief if I had remained in authority. I always had good judgment, more judgment than talent, in fact. No, the nom de plume did not originate in that way. Captain Sellers used the signature, Mark Twain, himself, when he used to write up the antiquities in the way of river reminiscences for the New Orleans Picayune. He hated me for burlesquing them in an article in the True Delta. So 4 years later when he died, I robbed the corpse, that is, I confiscated the nom de plume. I have published this vital fact 3,000 times now. But no matter, it is good practice. It is about the only fact that I can tell the same way every time. Very glad, indeed, to hear from you, Major, and shall be gladder still to see you in November. Truly yours, S.50. Clemens. He did not make the journey down the river planned for that year. He had always hoped to make another steamboat trip with Bixby, but one thing and another interfered, and he did not go again. Authors were always sending their books to Mark Twain to read, and no busy man was ever more kindly disposed toward such offerings, more generously considerate of the senders. Louis Pendleton was a young unknown writer in 1888, but Clemens took time to read his story carefully, and to write to him about it a letter that cost precious time, thought, and effort. It must have rejoiced the young man's heart to receive a letter like that from one whom all young authors held supreme. To Louis Pendleton, in Georgia. Elmira, N.Y., August 4, 88. My dear sir, I found your letter an hour ago among some others which had lain forgotten a couple of weeks, and I at once stole time enough to read therein. Stole is the right word, for the summer vacation is the only chance I get for work, so no minute subtracted from work is borrowed, it is stolen. But this time I do not repent. As a rule, people don't send me books which I can thank them for, and so I say nothing which looks uncourteous. But I thank you. Ariadne is a beautiful and satisfying story, and true, too, which is the best part of a story, or indeed of any other thing. Even liars have to admit that, if they are intelligent liars. I mean in their private, the word conscientious written but erased intervals. I struck that word out, because a man's private thought can never be a lie. What he thinks, is to him the truth, always. What he speaks, but these be platitudes.
If you want me to pick some flaws, very well, but I do it unwillingly. I notice one thing which one may notice also in my books, and in all books, whether written by man or God. Trifling carelessness of statement or expression. If I think that you meant that she took the lizard from the water which as he had drawn from the well, it is evidence, it is almost proof that your words were not as clear as they should have been. True, it is only a trifling thing, but so is mist on a mirror. I would have hung the pail on Ariadne's arm. You did not deceive me when you said that she carried it under her arm, for I knew she didn't. Still it was not your right to mar my enjoyment of the graceful picture. If the pail had been a portfolio, I wouldn't be making these remarks. The engraver of a fine picture revises, and revises, and revises, and then revises, and revises, and revises, and then repeats. And always the charm of that picture grows, under his hand. It was good enough before, told its story, and was beautiful. True. And a lovely girl is lovely, with freckles, but she isn't at her level best with them. This is not hypercriticism. You have had training enough to know that. So much concerning exactness of statement. And that other not small matter selection of the exact single word you are hard to catch. Still, I should hold that Mrs. Walker considered that there was no occasion for concealment, that Odev implied a deeper mental search than she expended on the matter, that it doesn't reflect the attitude of her mind with precision. Is this hypercriticism? I shan't dispute it. I only say that if Mrs. Walker didn't go so far as to have a motive, I had to suggest that when a word is so near the right one that a body can't quite tell whether it is or isn't, it's good politics to strike it out and go for the thesaurus. That's all. Motive may stand. But you have allowed a snake to scream, and I will not concede that that was the best word. I do not apologize for saying these things, for they are not said in the speck-hunting spirit, but in the spirit of want to help if I can. They would be useful to me, if said to me once a month. They may be useful to you, said once. I save the other stories for my real vacation, which is 9 months long, to my sorrow. I thank you again. Truly yours, S50. Clemens. In the next letter we get a sidelight on the typesetting machine, the Frankenstein monster, that was draining their substance and holding out false hopes of relief and golden return. The program here outlined was one that would continue for several years yet, with the end always in sight, but never quite attained. To Orion Clemens, in Keokuk, Iowa. October 3, 88. Private, Saturday 29th. By a closely calculated estimate, there were 85 days work to do on the machine. We can use 4 men, but not constantly. If they could work constantly, it would complete the machine in 21 days, of course. They will all be on hand and under wages, and each will get in all the work there is opportunity for, but by how much they can reduce the 85 days toward the 21 days, nobody can tell. Today I pay Pratt and Whitney $10,000. This squares back-endedness, and everything to date. They began about May or April or March 1886 along there somewhere, and have always kept from a dozen to 24 master dash hands on the machine. That outgo is done. 4 men for a month or two will close up that leak and caulk it. Work on the patents is also kind of drawing toward a conclusion. Love to you both. All well here. And give our love to Ma, if she can get the idea. Sam. Mark Twain that year was working pretty steadily on The Yankee at King Arthur's Court, a book which he had begun 2 years before. He had published nothing since the Huck Finn story, and his company was badly in need of a new book by an author of distinction. Also, it was highly desirable to earn money for himself, Wherefore he set to work to finish the Yankee story. He had worked pretty steadily that summer in his Elmira study, but on his return to Hartford, found a good deal of confusion in the house, so went over to Twitchell's, where carpenter work was in progress. He seems to have worked there successfully, though what improvement of conditions he found in that numerous, lively household over those at home it would be difficult to say. To Theodore W. Crane, at Quarry Farm, Elmira, N. Y., Friday, October, 5, 88. Dear Theo, I am here in Twitchell's house at work, with the noise of the children, and an army of carpenters to help. Of course they don't help, but neither do they hinder. It's like a boiler factory for racket, and the nailing a wooden ceiling onto the room under me the hammering tickles my feet amazingly sometimes, and jars my table a good deal, but I never am conscious of the racket at all, and I move my feet into position of relief without knowing when I do it. I began here Monday morning, and have done 80 pages since. I was so tired last night, that I thought I would lie abed and rest, today. But I couldn't resist. I mean to try to knock off tomorrow, but it's doubtful if I do. I want to finish the day the machine finishes, and a week ago the closest calculations for that indicated October 22, but experience teaches me that their calculations will misfire, as usual. The other day the children were projecting a purchase, Livy and I to furnish the money $1.50. John discouraged the idea. She said, "Colin, we haven't got any money. Children, if you would think, you would remember the machine isn't done. It's billiards tonight. I wish you were here. With love to you both, S50. C.P.S. I got it all wrong. It wasn't the children, it was Marie. She wanted a box of blacking for the children's shoes." John reproved her and said, "Why, Marie, you mustn't ask for things now. The machine isn't done. S50. See, the letter that follows is to another of his old pilot friends, one who was also a schoolmate, Will Bowen, of Hannibal. There is today no means of knowing the occasion upon which this letter was written, but it does not matter. It is the letter itself that is of chief value. To Will Bowen, in Hannibal, Mo. :, Hartford, November 4, 88. Dear Will, I received your letter yesterday evening, just as I was starting out of town to attend a wedding, and so my mind was privately busy, all the evening, in the midst of the maelstrom of chat and chaff and laughter, with the sort of reflections which create themselves, examine themselves, and continue themselves, unaffected by surroundings, unaffected, that is understood, by the surroundings, but not uninfluenced by them. Here was the near presence of the two supreme events of life. Marriage, which is the beginning of life, and death, which is the end of it. I found myself seeking chances to shirk in two corners where I might think, undisturbed. And the most I got out of my thought was this. Both marriage and death ought to be welcome. The one promises happiness, doubtless the other assures it. A long procession of people filed through my mind, people whom you and I knew, so many years ago, so many centuries ago, it seems like, and these ancient dead marched to the soft marriage music of a band concealed in some remote room of the house, and the contented music and the dreaming shade seemed in right accord with each other, and fitting. Nobody else knew that a procession of the dead was passing through this noisy swarm of the living, but there it was, and to me there was nothing uncanny about it. Rio, they were welcome faces to me. I would have liked to bring up every creature we knew in those days, even the dumb animals. It would be bathing in the fabled fountain of youth. We all feel your deep trouble with you, and we would hope, if we might, but your words deny us that privilege. To die oneself is a thing that must be easy, and of light consequence, but to lose a part of oneself, well, we know how deep that pang goes, we who have suffered that disaster, received that wound which cannot heal. Sincerely your friend S50. Clemens. His next is of quite a different nature. Evidently the typesetting conditions had alarmed Orion, and he was undertaking some economies with a view of retrenchment. Orion was always reducing economy to science. Once, at an earlier date, he recorded that he had figured his personal living expenses down to 60 cents a week, but inasmuch as he was then, by his own confession, unable to earn the 60 cents, this particular economy was wasted. Orion was a trial, certainly, and the explosion that follows was not without excuse. Furthermore, it was not as bad as it sounds. Mark Twain's rages always had an element of humor in them, a fact which no one more than Orion himself would appreciate. He preserved this letter, quietly noting on the envelope, "Letter from Sam, about Ma's nurse." Letter to Orion Clemens, in Keokuk, Iowa. Nov. 29, 88. Jesus Christ. It is perilous to write such a man. You can go crazy on less material than anybody that ever lived. What in hell has produced all these maniacal imaginings? You told me you had hired an attendant for Ma. Now hire one instantly, and stop this nonsense of wearing Molly and yourself out trying to do that nursing yourselves. Hire the attendant, and tell me her cost, so that I can instruct Webster and Company to add it every month to what they already send. Don't fool away any more time about this. And don't write me any more damned rot about terms, and inability to pay trivial sums of money and hell and damnation. You see, I've read only the first page of your letter. I wouldn't read the rest for $1,000,000. Dear Sam. P.S. Don't imagine that I have lost my temper, because I swear. I swear all day, but I do not lose my temper. And don't imagine that I am on my way to the poorhouse, for I am not, or that I am uneasy, for I am not, or that I am uncomfortable or unhappy, for I never am. I don't know what it is to be unhappy or uneasy, and I am not going to try to learn how, at this late day. Sam. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.